Welcome to Sacrilegious Discourse.
For this is what the Sovereign Lord says.
Why do you need prophets to tell people who you are and what you want?
If you can justify everything that the God of the Bible has done, then you can justify any of your behavior.
A lot of this mentality is trickling into what is now mainstream right-wing Christianity.
I am capable of empathy greater than this God of the Bible.
This is a Bible that they tell kids. This is the good Lord. This is the good book. He is fantasizing about murder, mass murder.
Head over to sacrilegiousdiscourse.com right now to find out how to leave us a review or support us on Patreon.
Husband!
Wife!
What are we doing today?
We did a Q&A yesterday.
We sure as fuck did.
And we're doing, I think, another today.
It's a Q&A after Saturday. Part two is on Sunday.
And this might be an ongoing thing.
Pretty sure it's going to be.
The New Testament has way more questions from us.
No, the New Testament is fucking bullshit, y'all.
It is.
I hate it.
Like, we're really, there's a lot of, you have to hold them to account because there's so much that they're trying to claim from the Old Testament.
It's pissing me off.
It's just, it's absurd. It's absurd how much you have to.
It's ridiculous.
To account.
It's over the top. It's fucking. I hate it.
They're being extra.
They're being so extra. Jesus needs to get a grip. Listen. Okay, so we did a Q&A over chapter 8, and now we're finishing the Q&A over Matthew chapter 9 and 10.
All right. You ready to get into this?
Do I have a choice? Look,
you've always got a choice.
I have a lot of material here, and a lot of it pissed me off. Okay?
All right.
So just hold on to your butts.
So you're ready then?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Okie dokie. All right, we are getting into the Q&A for Little Maddie, chapters 9 and 10.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Chapter 9 continues the same theme that we had from chapter 8.
So bullshit?
More bullshit. With, like, some of the miracles and stuff like
that.
And the exorcisms and what have you.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Jesus is going to demonstrate his authority, continuing to do so over disease, disability, sin, death, and demons.
Of course.
Okay?
Because he's just this magic being.
He's a magic man, mama. Yeah. So, okay, we're going to start out reading verses 1 and 2, because we had questions right off the bat.
Okay.
Okay? Yeah. Jesus stepped into a boat, crossed over, and came to his town. Some men brought to him a paralyzed man lying on a mat. When Jesus saw their faith, he said to the man, "Take heart, son, your sins are forgiven." Boom.
First of all, I know we had a question about his town.
Yeah, like what the fuck, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, apparently that's a real popular question. So yay on us for asking a popular question.
Yeah.
I love it when we do that because it means that we're reading it like astutely.
Sure.
You know, we're not scholars. We're neither scholars nor academics. So when we ask a question that a lot of readers ask, it means that we're paying attention. We're getting it right. We're doing our job.
I would hope that after 6 years, we've got this down pretty well.
I really wanted to just toot our horn, and you're like, absolutely fucking not. All right, so this town that he's like, my town.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
My house is a very, very, very fine house. What town is it?
Nobody knows.
Okay. Most scholars think his own town, quote unquote, refers to Capernaum. I don't know if you recall, but earlier in chapter 4, Jesus had left his hometown of Nazareth and settled in Capernaum.
Oh, okay.
By this point, Capernaum appears to function as his base of operations.
Oh.
So that's okay. Best guess, but scholars do admit it's kind of fucking surprising.
Dude has so many fucking towns associated with him. I don't know what, like.
Jesus of Nazareth? What the fuck?
Right, yeah.
And Bethlehem,
right, yeah. Right? Like, you got so many fucking towns.
Where you were born, where you grew up.
What's this one called? This is
Capernaum.
Capernaum.
That's where he lived as an adult.
That one I've never heard before. That's not one I would have associated with Jesus.
But apparently we should really fucking know it because that's like where he does all his preaching and shit.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, again, scholars are like, it's kind of weird that it's like not really said anything because, like, modern readers will instinctively think of Nazareth, you know, where he, you know, Jesus of Nazareth, sure. where he grew up, right, as his town.
Yeah.
But Matthew seems to be using, quote unquote, his own town in the sense of where he currently lives and works.
Okay.
Which makes sense.
Sure.
I mean, we do the same.
Right.
I've lived multiple places in my life, and I usually quote the one where I'm at.
But if you're a God and you're trying to put together a Bible that's going to last thousands of years, you know.
That question comes up all throughout this. All throughout this. Okay, so the next thing, that was verse one. The next thing to take note in verse two is the, take heart, son, your sins are forgiven. Like, whoa, we haven't even asked a question yet.
Yeah.
Like, they brought this guy here and he didn't, he just like immediately is just like, you're forgiven. Excuse you? Jesus forgives the guy for his sins before he even heals him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, we missed that completely.
I would assume that maybe that's a necessary step. You have to be forgiven before you can be healed.
Well, it's like kind of a parable kind of thing.
Okay.
I mean, it may really have happened. Let's pretend for a minute.
No.
But it's supposed to be making a point. The man's problem is paralysis, yet Jesus is addressing his sin. Like, his soul is broken, not just his body.
Okay.
So he addresses his soul before he even messes with his body.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Sure. Because obviously sin causes paralysis.
Well, sin is the deeper problem.
No, I got it.
Is what we're supposed to get out of this.
Yeah.
And in the ancient world, illness and sin were often linked. And that goes with what you said. Sure, sin causes paralysis, obviously.
Right.
Didn't you know that when you sin, you're a fuckface?
Well, and it's still there's still stigma associated with ailments today.
Yeah.
That are caused by people's view of how religion manifests itself in people.
If something bad happened to you, you probably deserved it.
Right.
Yeah. And what did you do to deserve it?
It's one of the things I absolutely loathe about Christianity.
Same.
And religion in general, actually.
Yeah. Healing and forgiveness were frequently intertwined concepts. So you can't have one without the other. Yeah. All right. So then we move on to verse 3. At this, some of the teachers of the law said to themselves, "This fella is blaspheming." He's blaspheming.
Jesus is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he's doing magic.
He's healing people?
What a freak.
If I saw somebody heal somebody from paralysis, I don't feel like I would react by saying he's blaspheming.
He's doing magic.
I'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Dude, what do I got to do to be on your team?
But they're like, nah, witchcraft.
See, this is why.
It's the devil.
This is why this is crap.
It is crap.
This isn't how it went down.
No. Well, the scribes immediately recognize the implication and start adding, who the fuck does this guy think he is?
Okay.
Because they're I'm the power around here. I don't know what this Jesus kid is doing.
Sure.
Like, that guy, he's going around healing stuff. Who the fuck does that guy think he is?
Right, right.
So they, like, jump into the crowd going, hey, wise guy, eh?
Right.
Okay, the miracle then functions almost like evidence in a legal argument. So we get Jesus claiming authority to forgive sins. Then we get the critics object to that.
Yeah.
And then Jesus heals the man. And then the healing is presented as proof of the authority claim, but also of the magic that happened. And so he's guilty of magic.
So again, this is just Matthew litigating the case for Jesus.
Yeah, he's building
the
case.
That's all it is.
Not just recounting the story.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Absolutely. That's absolutely correct. All right, so he reads the evil hearts of the scribes and presents a question, and then he asserts his authority over both sins and disease. Okay, so that's that section.
Sure.
Okay, so then we move on to the call of Matthew the tax collector in verse 9. As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, he told him, and Matthew got up and followed him.
Of course, because why wouldn't you? Except for that. Apparently, no one liked him, and no one knew what he does either.
Yeah, it was pretty sad for Matthew. No, it sucked to be Matthew.
Okay.
Because the term tax collector carried all this political baggage.
Sure.
They worked within the Roman system, so to many Jews, they represented foreign occupation, economic exploitation, even collaboration. So a modern analogy might be like somebody working for ICE.
Sure.
Particularly if that ICE employee is black or brown, they would see him as a complete fucking traitor. Like, right. you're working for Empire. Right. Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
So the scandal isn't merely his shitty occupation. It's very much that he's in a shitty occupation on the wrong fucking side.
Yeah.
So that's the big deal. Like, just to bring home some of the emotional implication of how hated Matthew was and what his job meant.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
So it's a big deal that Jesus is seeking him out, like, hey, you're a son of a bitch. Come with me, you ICE employee. Right?
Right.
So, okay, then we move on to verse 14, 15, 16, and 17. Okay? And I'm going to skip 15, but I'm going to read around it.
Okay?
Because this is like blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Okay? Then John's disciples came and asked him, how is it that we and the Pharisees fast often, but your disciples do not fast?
Right.
And then Jesus is like, no one sews a patch of unshrunk cloth on an old garment, for the patch will pull away from the garment, making the tear worse. Neither do people pour new wine into old wineskins. If they do, the skins will burst, the wines will run out, and the wineskins will be ruined. No, they pour new wine into new wineskins, and both are preserved. We kind of worked our way through that and kind of figured it out.
Yeah.
But I just thought I'd, like, bring clarify. It. Yeah, clarify. The imagery actually comes from literal ancient storage technology. As wine ferments, it expands, and old wineskins become brittle and lose elasticity.
Okay.
So the metaphor isn't just like old bad, new good. It's more like saying that new realities require better structures capable of containing them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
His message is the new wine.
Got it.
Yeah. And it needs a better holder.
Okay.
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 So while the metaphor sounds harmless today, like what the fuck ever.
Right.
It would have been very controversial because
it's the case for the new religion, basically.
Yes. In context, it suggests that the existing religious structures may be unable to contain what Jesus is bringing to the table.
Like, yeah.
So
Jesus is like, yo, this can't even hold me. We need something new.
Yeah. Yeah. So what he was saying was like, he was talking all this flowery poesy that to us is like boring and lame, but like everything he was saying was extremely explosive.
Right.
It was all dog whistles and it was all like, you know what I'm talking about? You smell what I'm putting down?
Right. And it was meant for the audience at the time,
mm-hmm.
right? Which mm-hmm. is, you know, another thing to me that kind of goes against the whole this maintains through thousands of years,
right? Because it's not, we're not the audience.
Much like the Old Testament, how they were always speaking to the politics of the time, mm-hmm. this also is speaking to the politics of the time.
Yes, very much so.
It's not any different.
We are not the intended audience, and that's why we have to like be like, oh, that actually meant something I would never have known.
Right.
Cool.
But it actually counters the whole argument for mm-hmm. Christianity, in my opinion.
In my opinion as well. So then we move on to verses 20, 21, and 22. Just then, a woman who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak. She said to herself, if I only touch his cloak, I will be healed. Jesus turned and saw her. Take heart, daughter, he said. Your faith has healed you. And the woman was healed in that moment. So what I kind of got this, but I missed a little part of it. Under the laws in Leviticus, chronic bleeding, particularly in a woman, would have created ritual impurity. Mm. So she was consistently impure.
Okay. So she couldn't have been part of any.
Right.
Anything. Right.
She was always bleeding. Therefore, she was never clean.
Right. She probably couldn't have a husband.
She couldn't have children.
Right.
Nothing.
Right.
She was deprived.
Yeah.
So this means her condition was not only medical, it was also social and religious.
Right.
And like, we can kind of know that, but like, I didn't put it all together to understand the impact of like basically what they're trying to say that Jesus did for this woman.
Sure.
He didn't just like fix her medical condition. He like fixed her life.
Sure.
So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Also, I did want to take a note that it said that she had been bleeding specifically for 12 years.
Yeah.
And we're going to see later on the story of the little girl that died that he brought back to life. We're going to hear that story again. Now, in this version of the story in Matthew, it's just she's a little girl. Okay, apparently when we get to Mark or Luke, I don't remember which one retells this story.
Okay.
They're going to specifically give her an age. And guess how old she is?
12.
12.
Ah.
And why is 12 so special and magical?
I don't know.
The 12 tribes of Moses. Or Judaism. Not Judaism.
The 12 tribes of
Israel.
Yeah.
Jacob.
There we go.
That guy.
That's the one.
Jacob. La, 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 la. Yeah. So, yeah, I just wanted to, even though there's a little bit of a spoiler, it's not because we already read the story. We just didn't know how old she was.
Sure.
But that's going to be magical when that gets put together. Like 12 is but I mean, they just used 12 number. In there.
So like 12 is the magic number.
Yeah.
Right now.
Right.
They're like, yeah, we're still, all the tribes are here. We're
everything's 12. 12-y, 12, 12, 12s. Right. 12 on 12.
Yeah.
Which
would make sense because they're talking about end times and the this is the prophet, right? Mm-hmm. So he's supposed to be bringing everybody back together.
Yeah.
All the tribes are supposed to, so that number 12 is really mm-hmm. important to them.
Because they're trying to paint the case for we're the best Jews ever. We're the real sure. Jews. We got, like, we're not just, like, one of the many sects of Judaism running around here. Well, we're 12, the ones that count.
They had 12 disciples, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is like 12, 12, 12, 12,
12. 12, 12, 12, right. Yep. All right, so then we're going to move on to verses 23, 24, and 25.
Okay.
Okay. When Jesus entered the synagogue leader's house and saw the noisy crowd and people playing pipes, he said, "Go away. The girl is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After the crowd had been put outside, he went in and took the girl by the hand, and she got up.
Okay.
So this is a big deal because, and I already mentioned the 12-year thing.
Yeah.
Jesus touched the dead.
Right, which is not
taboo. Cool.
Right.
Very taboo.
Yeah, yeah.
According to Jewish purity laws, touching a corpse caused ritual impurity. Yet Jesus repeatedly moves toward things associated with impurity, like lepers, bleeding women, corpses, demons. He's always going up and he's touching all these dirty, nasty things.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And getting his goodness all over them instead of them getting their badness on him.
Right, right.
So it's, again, that...
We talked about this in the last Q&A, actually.
Yes, too. But this is just another example of continuing that theme of the reverse flow of energy is big in the Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay? So Matthew was repeatedly portraying Jesus as completely unconcerned with contamination, and instead of impurity spreading into him... Holiness spreads outward from him.
Sure.
So it's a big deal, deserves being said again because it happened again.
Well, and that's why they need a whole new religion.
A whole new religion.
The old Judaism does not hold what Jesus is. You know, like they have to, there has to be more.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So, okay, then we move on to verse 27. As Jesus went on from there, two blind men followed him, calling out, "Have mercy on us, Son of David."
Sure.
And we were like, they're blind. How they know that was him? And you were like, oh, they heard the crowd. Come on.
Yeah.
Anyways, calling Jesus Son of David is a political and theological statement. The guys were basically saying, we believe you are the promised king.
Hmm.
This continues the irony from previous chapters that throughout Matthew, it's always the outsiders, the marginal people, the disabled who often identify Jesus immediately correctly.
Yeah.
Before the actual religious experts do.
Right.
And there's another irony that we kind of missed. The blind men who are physically blind, Matthew portrays them as spiritually able to see.
Sure.
And then, so they see who Jesus is while the religious experts themselves are spiritually blind.
Right. And it's, I mean, that makes for a nice catchphrase, right? Even a blind man can see that this is Jesus.
Exactly.
So
that probably is where that fucking came from.
It's, it's a bit much.
It's
you know,
so like annoying.
This is part of that whole sales pitch that they're mm-hmm. using to pitch this religion and say, look, all these people can see that he's Jesus. Obviously, it's the old establishment that's wrong, and these people are correct. And look at all the things he's doing. So it makes he's definitely this guy. He's the Son of God, you know?
Look, I'm going to interrupt myself here, and I'm going to make an analogy that sounds odd, but hang with me for a minute. So about 10 years ago, for the first time ever, I watched the movie Casablanca. Okay. The first time I ever watched it, I'm watching it and I'm like, oh my God, every cliche that I've ever fucking heard is in this movie. This is where they originated from.
Yeah.
So I hated it. I hated Casablanca because I was like, ugh. And that's how I feel about the New Testament. Now, having said that, as a person who studies writing and plot and story structure, I rewatched Casablanca again, and I studied the screenplay, and it turns out that it is one of the most brilliant screenplays ever read. And once I could get past my own self and what expectations I brought and what I already thought I knew and everything, I love the film now. Yeah. I think it's a great film.
Sure.
So there is a chance that were I to reread this, that I would love it, but here's the fucking thing. No, get that look off of your face.
I was just trying to...
I am absolutely not rereading this ever, ever again to give it that opportunity, because fuck that shit.
I really don't think that that would happen, because there's
I don't either. I'm trying to be honest and say sometimes I can go into something and be like, that's where all that shit came from? This is stupid.
No, I was getting ready to say, actually, that I really can't understand if you presented me with this book and said, this is God, and then mm-hmm. just said, read the book.
Go.
Right, yeah. And I'm here by myself reading it alone in my house mm-hmm. trying to find this God, right?
Trying to find Jesus.
I'd be like, when are we getting to the God bit? When are we getting to the part where this sounds like legitimate or real?
Right.
Like, this all sounds very contrived and bullshit.
It's very hokey.
Yeah.
Very hokey.
Like, why would you take the words written 2,000 years ago and still, like, what is the reason that you accept these words as the gospel?
Right.
Why do you accept this? Because everybody tells you to? Because that's what it feels like.
It doesn't feel
like it's anything to do with the actual text. It has to do with people are telling you that this is the text, and that's the reason you're actually believing it.
The emotional satisfaction of going along with everybody around you.
Right.
Like, it's the Emperor Was Naked story all over again. The
Emperor Has No Clothes?
Yeah, that one. where, like, everybody just assumes that they're the dumb one, and so they just keep it to themselves.
Yeah.
Like, let me free you. You're allowed to speak up and say, no, you know what? Actually, this is stupid.
Right.
Just so you know.
It is stupid.
Okay. So moving on to verses 32, 33, and 34.
Sure.
While they were going out, a man who was demon-possessed and could not talk, was brought to Jesus.
Because they were the same thing, you know, back then.
And when the demon was driven out, the man who had been mute spoke. I don't know what he said, but the crowd was amazed and said, nothing like this has ever been seen in Israel.
Oh, man.
But the Pharisee said, it is by the prince of demons that he drives out demons. So,
well, I mean, if he's driving out demons, does it really matter who's allowing him to do it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, like, if there are demons in the first place and there's somebody driving them out, isn't that a good thing regardless of who's
Not if you're using dark magic to do it.
But
it matters to them,
I guess.
Like, dark magic is dark magic. We don't touch it.
I'll tell you what. If I had an ailment and you could cure it and it was using dark magic...
I'll do it.
Go for it,
I'll
man.
Use that dark magic. I have no problem with it.
Use it all day.
Yep,
it's fine.
Yep. So here's more of that so easy even a blind man can see it.
Yeah.
Irony.
Right.
The mute man speaks while the educated scribes fail to be able to understand and read what's right before them.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. I had to include that.
Yeah. No, I mean,
that's just good fun.
Yeah.
But it talks about, like, the demon guy, And so I was like, hang on, hang on. Who's the Prince of Demons now? Because it says it is by the Prince of Demons that he drives out demons.
Right.
And we were like, who the fuck is that?
I mean, that would be Satan, right?
Well, Matthew doesn't name him. He later identifies a figure in the next chapter as Beelzebul or Beelzebub.
Right.
I'm going to go ahead and talk about him now, though.
Okay.
Since he talks about him now as the Prince of Demons.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay.
The name likely derives from an ancient Philistine deity associated with Ekron. And I'm like, what's an Ekron?
Right, yeah.
It was one of the five major cities of the ancient Philistines.
Okay. All right.
Located in what is now modern day Israel. So basically in this city, they used to like celebrate this god guy. Okay. It was part of the Philistine Pentapolis along with Gaza, Ashkelon, Ashdod, Gath.
Let me put you on pause a second here. So this is more other gods shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tribal god.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, like we had Molech in the old, you know.
Yeah.
And,
well, in the Hebrew Bible, we forgot, but Ekron, the city, appears several times as a Philistine city and enemy territory. And one famous story occurs in 2 Kings chapter 1, where King Ahaziah sends messengers to consult Baal-zebub.
Oh.
The god of Ekron.
Oh.
About whether he will recover from an injury. Yeah, I didn't remember that either. So I was like, oh, thank you, research.
Right.
Nice. Yeah. So the name Baal-zebub is usually translated into either Beelzebul or Beelzebub.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay.
And it is also usually translated from there into English as Lord of the Flies.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which is funny because the movie Lord of the Flies is about to come out. I don't know if you know
that. I didn't know that, no.
Or is it a movie or is it a mini series or a short series on Netflix or something?
I thought there was already a Lord of the Flies.
There was a Lord of the Flies book, obviously, and then a Lord of the Flies movie.
Right.
But I think Netflix is creating a short series, a limited series.
Got it.
Which I'm like, pass, because that fucking traumatized me. I did not need to see little boys in, you know, basically, you know what Lord of the Flies is about, right?
I think no.
They're either like on an airplane or a boat or some shit and it crashes, right? And so there's a bunch of little boys from this fucking rich boarding school.
Yeah.
And within like a month, they just devolve into fucking
feral
little shits who beat the fuck out of each other.
I thought I had kind of remembered that, but I didn't want to say that with any other words.
The main character's name is like Piggy or something like that. Or he's maybe not the main character, but he's like the best of them.
Yeah.
And he wears glasses and they take his glasses from him and they fucking kill him or whatever.
Right.
Like, it's tragic and horrific. And I cannot...
Right.
But, like, it's aptly named.
Sure.
And it obviously comes from this, like,
right.
Lord of the Flies, right?
Sure.
The original meaning of Baal-zebub is debated. So it might not actually translate to Lord of the Flies. That's just what we think it does.
Yeah.
Some scholars think that it might originally have been Baal-zebul, which would be Lord Prince or Exhausted... Exhausted. That's me.
Exalted
Lord.
Yeah.
And that Israelite writers deliberately altered the name to make it sound more insulting.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Like they stuck a little middle finger right in the middle of them.
I like that actually.
Yeah. Yeah. By Jesus's time, Beelzebub had become a title for Satan or a chief demonic ruler.
Okay.
So, like, so around this time...
It's one of the two.
Well, around this time, they're like, sure, yeah, it's Satan or, you know, thereabouts, one of them evil god magic yuck-yucks.
Yeah.
We don't like that dark magic-y devil thing.
Sure.
So the accusation is essentially this Jesus guy is doing some real supernatural acts, which we acknowledge.
Okay.
We don't argue that these are happening, but the power source is evil. Where he's...
You're saying that the priests are acknowledging that they're happening. They're saying the power source is evil.
Yes.
Okay.
The Pharisees in this story don't deny that the miracle happened.
But even them not denying that they're happening is a convenient story plot structure for them. Like, there is no actual account of these things happening. So...
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Matthew's like, the one who wrote it. Right, so.
Yeah. So the account of people saying that he did them, whether good or bad.
Okay, Matthew.
Is.
Right.
Whatever.
Exactly. So then we move on to verses 35 and 36.
Okay.
To bring that chapter home.
Yeah.
Okay. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd.
Mm.
That's some more of that dog whistle stuff I was telling you about. Because in the Hebrew Bible, shepherd language was often used for kings, priests, and leaders. So calling people sheep without a shepherd isn't just like soft talk. It's not like lame.
Right. They're saying nothing. Guys don't have a leader.
Yeah.
No one's leading you.
It's an implicit criticism of the current leadership.
Yeah.
He's saying that the people are suffering because those entrusted to guide them have failed. And so it's not just that the people are lost. It's that those responsible for guiding them are actually not doing their fucking job.
Got it.
So, like...
So he's criticizing the current priest structure, the
political leaders, structure, the king, everything. From... Yeah. Every leader ever.
Right.
Yeah. So this guy... according to Matthew, this Jesus guy, he was pretty fucking explosive.
So, again, I'm hearing lots of politics.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
He was a political rebel.
You just can't escape politics in the Bible.
You just cannot.
Like, it's just always there.
It's always there. Yeah. So, that was chapter 9. Now, we're moving into chapter 10.
Okay.
Okay. So, up until now, Jesus has mostly been doing teaching and miracle working himself, right?
Yeah.
But in this chapter, he sends out the 12.
Right.
As his representatives.
Yeah.
They get a job description, instructions, warnings, and a preview of the trouble they're going to face.
Yeah.
Trouble right here in River City. Okay. A lot of this chapter is not about success, which is like really crazy considering this is supposed to be like a recruitment poster.
Well, but I mean, setting yourself up as the stomped on, the lesser is actually kind of a way to make people feel like empowered, you know, like, oh, you need to stand up stronger because people are shitting on us. They still do that today.
Yes, but in a different way. I'll get there.
Okay.
I'll get there.
Right.
Okay. This chapter, it's about persecution, rejection, family conflict, and sacrifice. But he's saying that by following me is what's going to bring all this.
Sure.
Not just they're getting us. It's because you are making the choice and be prepared for that. So
no, but that's similar wording to what they use today still. Like if you believe in Jesus, if you follow, you know, a spiritual life, then you're going to get shit on by the left and the left hates you and, you know.
Right. Blah, okay. Blah, blah, I hear blah. What you're saying, but what you're talking about is more aimed at and the left this and the left that and they hate you and they suck. Right. This is not saying they, them. This is about we suffer. We get kicked. Not saying by whom.
Okay.
Okay. It's very we. It is us and them, but it's not as blamey. It's as be ready.
Sure. I feel that's very nuanced, though.
It is like, very nuanced. Not, it is, you know, very nuanced, but it is a difference in messaging, though. It is.
Because the enemy would have been well known to them. The enemy would have been the political structures of the time, the priesthood of the time, you know, the power structures that be.
But Jesus isn't pointing at them saying, they gonna get you. He's pointing at the people saying, you gonna get got. There is a difference between the two.
Okay.
One is saying, go over there and get them because they're gonna get us. The other is pointing to the person, the victim.
No, I like the messaging here better. That's saying, be prepared for this. You're going to endure this while standing up for this.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
It is the same end result, but it is a different message.
Sure.
And it matters.
Right.
As we're going to see towards the end of this chapter, it is a different message and it matters.
Right.
Okay. So in the first two verses, we got Jesus called his 12 disciples and gave them authority to drive out impure spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. these are the names of the 12 apostles, dot, 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 and it goes on.
Yeah.
Okay, so my first question, along with you, was, hold on, what? Did Jesus actually give these guys superpowers?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, according to Matthew's narrative, yes.
Okay.
That's exactly what, like, we read that correctly. That is what happened.
Okay.
Verse 1 says,
so they're basically like the ancient time Avengers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We're not supposed to read it as like X-Men, but I can't not.
Right.
You know, I'm sorry. Magic powers is magic powers.
Jesus is basically like Storm. He can manipulate the weather and
exactly.
shit.
I mean, you know? Exactly. He's Thor, you know, without the hammer.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Jesus gave them authority over unclean spirits and the power to heal diseases and illnesses.
He was a carpenter, so he probably did have a hammer.
You're right. You're right. He did. So this is not presented as magic they learned or powers that they inherently possessed. It's delegated authority. So it's handed down from Jesus to these folks.
Okay.
Other Gospels and Acts are going to expand on the list further of what those powers entailed. But here we just see that they've been given the powers to cast out demons, cure illnesses, and heal diseases.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay.
So apparently there's even more.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Right.
Okay. So then we had some other questions. If they had superpowers, why would any of them betray Jesus? That doesn't track.
Yeah.
That's bullshit.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. Matthew doesn't really get into that. So.
As you wouldn't.
Right.
Because.
He doesn't.
That doesn't. You all have the ability to do all kinds of shit.
Mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm.
And yet. Whatever.
Yeah, I know.
Like the whole story just doesn't track.
The whole thing is silly.
Yeah.
It's nonsense.
Right.
But yeah, Matthew doesn't really get into why Judas specifically is the one who betrays him. But there are some common theories from actual scholars that hold a little bit of weight, like scholastically.
Well, I mean, we haven't got there yet, so he hasn't betrayed him yet.
No, but I wanted to know what was the social situation like that would cause people to join up and then to betray. That doesn't make sense if they have magic powers.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
One of the reasons might have been disappointment. Many Jews at that time, which we've talked about, expected a Messiah who would not just save them, but would overthrow Roman rule. So if Judas specifically was expecting a political revolution, Jesus's emphasis on suffering and humility might have seemed like failure.
Okay.
And so he might have been, fuck this. I'm like, all right.
That
makes sense.
Makes some sense.
He's like, your magic is bullshit if you're not overthrowing the government. Like, that's what I was in this for.
Sure.
Like, I can actually get down with that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Another one would have been greed, obviously, because Matthew, as we get further into this, is going to emphasize a lot the famous 30 pieces of silver.
Okay.
That's what, I don't know if you know the story.
No.
But, okay, so Judas is going to betray him for 30 pieces of silver.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Right.
Like, it's a big deal.
Got it.
It's in a lot of movies. Specifically, we would have seen it in the movie The Seventh Sign is one of my favorite movies. Demi Moore is so great. Highly recommend.
Demi Moore?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. she plays a pregoid girl.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I don't think of Demi Moore when I think of wasn't it just called Seven?
No, that's a different movie, my
love. Oh.
And I don't think that was Demi Moore in that one.
Yeah, that was Brad Pitt. And,
I'm thinking of The Seventh Sign.
Right.
Which was really good, and it was based on biblical stuff.
Got it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever saw that.
I don't think you did, but it was so good. Another thing might have been that Judas might have thought he could force Jesus's hand. And some scholars speculate that Judas may have expected Jesus to reveal his power once cornered. Like, I've seen you do a little bit of magic. Maybe if we get you cornered, you'll do something big. And that kind of plays into the first thing, which is, sure, I'm here to overthrow the government. How can I help this happen?
Right, right.
So I'm like, okay, that seems like a good reason to betray magic powers.
Right. You're talking about, you believe he's the son of God. So, I mean, he could do anything.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Why not?
Sure.
Why not make him do it?
Yeah. I get that. Yeah.
Sure.
The other one is that human beings are complicated, man. even if someone witnessed extraordinary events, that doesn't automatically produce loyalty. And history is full of people who work closely with remarkable leaders and then later turn against them. Which, I mean, yeah. Okay,
but I mean, but none of them produced
none miracles. Of them had magic powers.
Right, yeah.
Like, I'm thinking, like, okay, the very famous and talented singer Selena from San Antonio, Texas, was killed by her fan club leader and manager girl.
Right.
And, like, what?
Yeah.
But Selena couldn't do magic powers, though.
Right.
She merely was a great singer.
It just occurred to me, like, you know how Jesus gets resurrected, hypothetically?
Hypothetically, when we get but there. Spoilers, all we're his, not there
all
yet.
All of his disciples
yeah.
have the ability to resurrect people.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what I mean? We don't know that they can raise the dead.
Oh, okay.
We know that they can cure illness. I don't know. I haven't read the other Gospels yet. Maybe right. that's one of the superpowers right. that gets added on.
I mean, but with, like, with all these people with superpowers, though, you think they could have figured something out.
Right?
No?
And maybe they did.
Right.
So one subtle theme in Matthew is that seeing miracles, obviously, with these folks, does not necessarily guarantee faith.
Okay.
We've seen that. Like, these folks are like, magic? Ew, gross. You're of Beelzebub. You're Lord of the Flies. Get the fuck out of here with that magic shit.
Sure.
Lots of people in the Gospels supposedly witness astonishing things and yet remain unconvinced. I remain unconvinced, and I haven't seen shit.
Right. Why? It just feels like convenient.
Yeah.
You know.
Storytelling bullshit. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. All right. So here is where we move on to something that we did not even pick up on. This is vocabulary, which I am a nerd for. Chapter 10 is the first place where the 12, and yeah. I will always refer to them that way, the 12
right.
are called apostles. Up until now, they've been the disciples
sure.
when Matthew talked about them.
Yeah.
It should be noted that apostle and disciple aren't exactly the same thing.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
The Greek word is apostolos, one who is sent. So an apostle is a commissioned representative, whereas a disciple is a learner or student.
Ah.
Okay.
So they graduated.
Yeah.
When they got the superpowers, they graduated and they're yeah. getting sent out now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So all apostles are disciples, but not all disciples are apostles.
Okay.
Okay. This is all of which to say all reps are students, but not all students are reps. Okay. You know what okay. I mean? You got to be a student before you can be a rep. And if you're a rep, a representative,
okay.
you know, represent.
Sure.
You know, you've been sent out. Like I said, an apostle is a commissioned representative.
Right, right.
Okay. So if you're a rep, you've already been student.
Right. Okay?
Yeah. But not all students will graduate to rep.
Sure.
Okay? All right. The distinction becomes important later in Christian history is why I'm making a big deal about that vocabulary.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
So we'll try to remember that all apostles are disciples. But not all disciples are apostles.
I'll do my best.
I'll probably bring it up again because I know I won't remember it. I don't remember shit. I only found out today that Turkey can't decide if it's Europe or Asia. And I'm trying to learn the countries of the world. And I'm starting with Europe. And so I'm like going through and I'm like, okay, what are the countries of Europe? And then I get to Turkey and it's like, sometimes one, sometimes the other. Depends who you ask. And I'm like, what? But it's a border country.
Yeah.
And it gets to pick its own. And I right. think that's nice. That's nice for Turkey. Good on you, Turkey. You remain
on. We're going to be in Asia this week. Next week, we're going to go back to Europe.
So, yeah, you know. Yeah. Get the best of both.
Right.
That's the way to be.
Yeah.
Serious. Good on
you. I'm feeling a little Europe today.
Yeah. You know? And then other days be like, we can't be bothered. We're not going out. We'll be neither. I like that for you, Turkey.
Right.
Good yeah. on you. All right. So then we had another question. Like, all of this is like, we're barely in, okay, to chapter 10, okay? Why is Simon called Peter?
I don't
remember.
Know. Well, because there's two Simons.
We would think that, wouldn't we?
I mean, that's one wrong. Reason anyway.
We'd be wrong.
Of course we are.
Yeah. It's not because there was another Simon in the group. And the reason is because there's like other names, other double names.
Okay.
And there's Simon Peter and Simon the Zealot. There's James, son of Zebedee, and James, son of Alphaeus.
Mm.
There's Judas Iscariot. And then there's Judas, not Iscariot.
You can't have two Judases.
Right?
That's That the other
That's
Judas,
bullshit.
The other Judas gets a raw deal there.
I know. He's like, not Iscariot. Yeah. I was like, what? So they didn't mind having like all kinds of double names.
Right.
Like, no, it's fine that there's two Simons. Okay. Then why did you name him Peter? Well, here's the thing. Jesus just gave Simon this nickname. You're Peter now.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
And then that became his main name. Simon called Peter.
Got it.
Modern readers often assume a nickname should describe an obvious characteristic, but who the fuck knows? Question mark?
Sure.
So the name Peter itself comes from the Greek Petros, which means rock or stone. And we saw that he kind of mentioned like the church is going to be built on rock. And later on, we're going to see that I don't know if it's Matthew or like later on one of the other gospels. I don't know. We'll get there.
Okay.
It's going to say Peter, the rock, and the church will be built on you.
Okay.
And so,
like, so Peter's a very fundamental part of the disciple apostle group.
Apparently. Simon called Peter. Maybe Simon, not the
Simon,
other.
Simon called
Peter. I don't know about the other Peter. I haven't met.
Wait, is there two
know.
Peters? I thought there was two Simons, not two Peters.
No, you're right. Two okay. Simons. Simon Peter.
Right.
Okay. So I was like, but why rock? Why rock? Jesus is just walking around. He's like, nah, you're not Simon. You're rock.
Because it's solid, you know?
Solid as man. A rock.
You're solid, man.
Nah. Okay, so there's some possibilities we got here. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Possibility one is Jesus was making a prediction, which sure. I kind of alluded to there.
Right.
This is the traditional Christian interpretation because, of course, they're like, Jesus knew. That's why. Jesus wasn't naming Simon for what he already was, but for what he would become. He would become the rock.
Okay.
So he called him the rock now.
I see.
I'm like, get the fuck out of here with that. That's silly.
Right.
Okay, possibility two. Let's see if this one flies.
Okay.
It was an ordinary nickname, like, that was just between them, and it later acquired symbolic meaning. And this is the view favored among most historians. It's entirely possible that Jesus simply nicknamed Simon rock. For some now lost reason.
Okay.
And later Christians attach deeper theological significance to it. And this happens all the time in real life. Like, our kid is, like, really long and thin and lanky. And in school, like, all the way through elementary school, their friend group each had their own nickname for each other. And kids was Tree. Everybody right. called kid Tree.
Right.
And, like, if they went on to live a religious life with those friends or something, they could go back and ascribe lots of spiritual or Wiccan or Christian meaning to that.
Sure.
Or nature or what the fuck ever if they wanted.
Right.
But that's how nicknames do, you know?
Yeah.
So a nickname could just have started as an inside joke and then years later people invented profound reasons around it. And like, okay, that tracks.
Sure.
Possibility three is kind of along with possibility one that I already like said, I don't think so.
Okay.
Simon already had a forceful personality, which we haven't got to know Simon Peter yet. So we don't know him very well, but we're going to see that he frequently gets things wrong. But even so, he's always the first to act. He's always the first to speak. He's always the first to volunteer. He's always the first to protest. And he's always the first to jump into situations.
Okay.
So he's often portrayed, he will be, as the unofficial spokesman for the 12.
I see.
And a guy like that might plausibly earn a nickname among his crew, Tucci Gang.
Sure.
Suggesting solidity, strength, prominence.
Sure.
I mean, even though what's really funny is that the man called Rock eventually sinks in the water and goes on to deny Jesus.
Just really?
Spoilers. He's going to try to walk on water and fail. So the Rock will sink.
Interesting.
And then the Rock that the church is built on is going to deny Jesus.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but I saw that in my notes and I was like, okay, I know I'm supposed to avoid spoilers, but I had to put that in there because fuck him is why. And fuck that nickname is why. Because Rock, fuck you is why.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Come on. You're with me on this.
Sure.
You don't mind that spoiler, right? Because it is funny. It is funny. Simon. Yeah. I'm going to call you Rock. Okay. And the rug sinks in the water.
That's what Jesus saw.
That's awesome. Okay, so then we had questions about John, because it mentions John as one of the disciples. And we're like, is that the John the Baptist? And then we were like, no, that's a different John.
Right.
Yeah, there's only one John among the 12, but it's not John the Baptist.
Okay.
Okay, so you were right on that. Or I was right. One of us was right.
Somebody was right.
Somebody was right.
Sure.
Okay. Several disciples share names, which I already went over those double names.
Yeah.
Matthew doesn't always spell out any distinction between the double names. So sometimes he'll just be like Judas and you got to guess which one.
Fine. That's fine.
The Iscariot one or the not Iscariot
right? Yeah.
But his audience knew, and that's what counts.
No, yeah.
Fuck obvious. Those people 2,000 later.
Aren't we supposed to be the audience?
No. Fuck those people.
All right.
Yeah. So in chapters 1 through 10, there are at least two different Johns. At least.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
John the Baptist, and this is the John we've encountered most so far.
Yeah.
He's the wilderness preacher who baptizes Jesus, criticizes political and religious leaders, and gets arrested by Herod and Antipas.
Okay.
Okay? So we've seen all that thus far.
Right.
He's not one of the 12 disciples, which I kind of didn't know, so I'm glad I looked into that.
He's in jail, so.
Yeah, he's in jail. Fuck that guy. Yeah. Just kidding. I don't know. Maybe. Then there's John, son of Zebedee. Zebedee, you know?
Yeah.
This John is one of Jesus' disciples. He's brother of James, son of Zebedee. So he's also son of Zebedee.
Okay.
And he's one of the 12 listed. I'm sorry, the 12 listed in this chapter.
Yeah.
Okay. Matthew doesn't really spend much time on this particular John in the first 10 chapters. So we might see a little bit more of him, but thus far he's just part of the group.
Okay.
Okay. Now, the name Baptist, that going back to the jailbird, John the Baptist, that is actually so important in the book of Matthew that if the gospel simply says John and doesn't qualify it in any other way, it's always John the Baptist. If he just says John, it's John the Baptist.
Okay.
Okay. John the disciple will be qualified as John the disciple.
Okay.
Or John, son of, like, he will be qualified.
So John the Baptist is John.
He's Big John.
He's John.
He's the only John there ever was. Okay. Every other John needs a qualifier.
Got it.
Okay?
Yeah.
John the disciple, the one of the 12.
Yeah.
Not as big as John the Baptist. He's surprisingly quiet, and he'll remain largely in the background during Matthew's narrative, even though he'll become a major figure in later Christian tradition.
Okay.
I don't know how that happens because I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
And that's one of the hard parts of doing notes for these is trying to like stop myself from like what is to be versus where we are.
Right.
And it's really hard because every single source assumes you've already read the whole thing and know all the stories. And I'm like, what does that mean? What does that mean? What does that mean? And then I find out too much and I'm like, God damn it.
Right.
All right. So let's talk about Simon the Zealot, because that was one of the guys named. And we were like, Zealot, eh?
Yeah.
So he was zealous, was he? Saucy. He might not actually have been a zealot.
Okay.
Simon the Zealot, not a zealot.
Yeah.
That cracked me up.
Right.
Okay. Because, of course.
Right.
It would be easy to imagine him as a member of the revolutionary anti-Roman movement known as the Zealots.
Okay.
Because that's what it sounds like, right?
He's sure.
Simon the Zealot right, is one of those anti-Roman zealot guys, right? Sure. The problem is that organized zealot groups were only more clearly attested a few decades later. It was too early for Simon to be the zealot.
Except for that this was written decades later.
Right.
And so it might have been a misattribution.
Yeah, they backplugged it.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but so he probably wasn't the zealot. He might have become a zealot later. But at the time that this happened, it probably was not
who or again, it was. It could have just been something that they threw in there when they wrote this, not understanding that that wasn't a thing back then.
Right.
You know,
right.
They just didn't know.
It could mean that he's just an extremely enthusiastic cheerleader.
Sure.
Full of zeal.
Yep.
He's so cool. Rather than Simon the kick-ass guerrilla fighter.
Got it.
So we don't know. Okay. Historians actually debate this.
Sure.
Which one it is. Did he become a zealot? Was he already a zealot? Was it misattribution then or earlier or later? Like, what the fuck?
Right.
I don't really care, but I just thought I'd put it out there that that's an anachronism there.
Okay.
Okay. So then we go on to verses 5 and 6.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. Your face is like, oh, Jesus Christ. These 12, Jesus sent out with the following instructions. Do not go among the Gentiles or enter any town of the Samaritans.
Right.
Go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. So Jesus explicitly tells his disciples to avoid Gentiles and Samaritans, which is kind of surprising to me.
Right.
Like, wait, what? I thought he was supposed to be out there recruiting and like spreading the good word.
Why are we avoiding anybody?
Yeah.
Right.
This is a very strong indication, though, that during Jesus's lifetime, the movement may have been focused primarily on the Jews themselves and not trying to recruit outside of the Jewish parties.
Okay.
Like, they were trying to recruit from other sects of Judaism.
Right, right.
After his death, the mission obviously expanded to non-Jews, but...
Obviously.
You know, that's not where it was at right. that time.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Verse 8, heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. And we were like, oh, some people doing it wrong today. So the implication here is that healing and exorcism aren't commodities. In the ancient Mediterranean world, there were professional healers, magicians, diviners, and wonder workers.
Hmm.
Who often charged exorbitant fees for this kind of stuff that was happening.
Wait, so other people could do this shit? They just...
Other people claimed to do it and charge for it.
I gotcha.
Yeah. Jesus is flipping that, though, and he's urging Tucci Gang to do free lunch program with a side of exorcism.
Sure, sure.
He's like, come on, let's show them how it's really done and do it for free.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a big deal.
Okay.
Just so you know. Okay. So then we move on to verses 24 and 25. So we're cruising through this chapter now, okay? Yeah. The student is not above the teacher, nor is servant above his master. It is not enough for students to be like their teachers and servants like their masters. If the head of the house has been called Beelzebub, how much more the members of his household?
Right.
In the Old Testament, this deity appears as Baalzebub, which I already went over.
Yeah.
Lord of the Flies guy. But what Jesus is saying in this one is if they call the master of the house Beelzebub, just think about what they're going to say about you. If the people accuse me of being in league with the devil, they're going to accuse you too. And if they think I'm Satan, imagine what they're going to say about my followers.
Sure.
So look out. Yeah. Just be ready for that.
Right.
I'm just telling you. He's like, I'm just letting you know.
Yeah.
Whatever. All right, so verses 29, 30, and 31. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet none of them will fall to the ground outside your father's care or outside your father's will or outside
really...
your father's knowledge. Not sure what the translation is there.
This one really confused me.
Me too, and that's why.
I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I have an answer.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
And even the very hairs of your head are all numbered. So don't be afraid. You are worth more than many sparrows.
Okay.
Okay. So here's what this is about.
Okay.
Ready?
Yep.
Jesus is saying that sparrows are fucking cheap. They were among the least valuable birds sold in markets, and as such were among the cheapest food sources available.
Sure.
Even so, not even one falls without God's knowledge. So then he goes on to say that even the stupid hairs on your head are numbered. Right?
Okay.
Like, I know exactly how many stupid hairs you have.
Okay.
And so the point is supposed to be, if God notices such tiny, seemingly insignificant details, like these mundane bullshittery details, how much more would God notice human beings? Yeah. It's an argument from like lesser to greater. God notices sparrows. You matter more than sparrows. Therefore, God notices you.
But during Jesus's speech on the Mount... he was saying that birds were doing it right while people were doing it wrong. So maybe he thinks highly of birds more so sometimes than people.
I think it depends on the day. Honestly. It po- poetically expresses the idea that no life is too small to matter, which I can appreciate.
Sure.
And it reminds me that when I was going through basic training, we had the option to either attend church on Sundays or stay behind in the barracks and do cleaning all day.
Yeah.
So obviously I chose church.
That's not a fucking choice.
That's not a fucking choice, right?
Right.
I was like, I'm going to church.
Yeah.
I'm going to go pretend to get right with God. I had no intention of getting right with God. And sure. It didn't even occur to me that anybody went to church to actually go to church. Like in my head, I assumed everybody was like me.
Avoiding work. Right. Yeah.
I didn't get that we were being manipulated into going to church.
That's such a bullshit
thing.
That's like they... You have this idea that the military separates religion.
Yeah.
But to put it in those, like...
And if you ask me, were you forced to go to church? Well, no, I got the privilege of going to church.
Right. But that's not a privilege. That's a choice between...
Work or not
bad
work.
Things, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, but I didn't know that at the time. I was just like, I gotta sit down.
Right.
And the real struggle bus was trying to keep your fucking eyes open. No, seriously. And like when I am tired, like I cannot. And so I was like pinching myself. I was biting the insides of my lip bloody in order to stay
awake. What happened if
you
fell asleep?
You would get in trouble.
Oh, really?
Big time.
Okay.
Huge.
Well, I didn't know.
Yeah, that's part of, you were not allowed to sit. Except if you were given express permission to, and it had to be only on specific places. You can't lean against the wall because the wall doesn't need your help. Literally. Like, you would have to stop and do push-ups. You would get in trouble. You'd get yelled at, screamed at. You're stupid. You're worthless. You're a piece of shit. Whatever.
Right.
I mean, so many ridiculous rules. So, yeah, I'm going to go sit down because I'm allowed to sit down. But, oh, my God, staying awake. Okay. But the reason that I said all this was because the one time that I went, the only thing that I remember from all the times I went was this guy had the most gorgeous singing voice, and he sang this song about his eye is on the sparrow. That's the reason why I sing.
Okay.
And like, I don't know the song. I don't know anything about it. That's the only part that stayed with me, but it made me cry. Not like in a spiritual, like I wasn't feeling close to God.
Sure.
I was just like, I'm so tired. And that is a beautiful goddamn voice. And it was very poetic. And I was like, that's poetry to music.
Sure.
I was appreciating the art of it, but not the like, and that's now it. I found Jesus. I never made that leap.
Sure.
But anyway, so I think that that song, like when we read these verses, I think that song came from this.
Right. No, it would make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to find that song because it was a very pretty song.
Well, I mean, if anybody knows it out there, let us know.
I'm sure I did not do it even halfway justice. And my voice is giving.
Just because we haven't mentioned it in a while, you can always email us at sacrilegiousdiscourse@gmail.com.
No, that's so true. And if you know that song, please send me a link.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, fuck sparrows and the hairs on your head. Moving on to verses 34, 35, and 36. Do not suppose that I have come to bring peace to the earth, motherfuckers.
Of course not.
I did not come to bring peace, but a sword all of a sudden out of the blue. I'm talking weaponry.
Right.
For I have come to turn, quote, a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies will be the members of his own fucking household.
There goes my whole peaceful image of Jesus.
And we were like, and done. So, okay, we get a lot of scholars jumping in here going, wait.
Sure.
I think you might be misunderstanding. Let me try.
Are we though?
I don't know.
Okay.
A lot of scholars, most scholars, do not think, given everything else that Jesus has said, they do not think he's advocating for armed rebellion here. Okay. The sword is probably supposed to be maybe metaphorical. Parents against children, children against parents, households divided.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
He's saying that loyalty to Jesus is going to be like a sword because it's going to create social conflict.
Sure.
So not like pick up your swords and kill everybody. But I'm like, that sounds awesome. that sounds an awful lot like when Trump stood up before a crowd on January 6th and said, go ahead, we're going to fight, and I'm going to be right there with you.
Right.
And then acted all shocked. Who, me? What? Well, when everybody, you know, went and ran on the Capitol.
It sounds to me like Jesus is setting them up for the idea that they're going to be very much challenged with regard to their belief in him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is, you should be prepared for your parents to be against you, for yes. your, for everybody to be against you, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to suck. If you follow me, this is going to suck. If you,
yeah,
it doesn't matter who you are. If you follow me, this is going
to
suck.
No, totally. And I go on to summarize that, those exact words later.
Right.
The question would be, why would a first century religious movement encourage loyalty that even transcends family ties, which is really big? Because one thing that should jump out to us is that Jesus is constantly redefining kinship. This is the first point about family and kinship, okay? Sure. In the ancient world, family determined almost everything about your identity, right? Like, right. You know, who you are, your whole, like, descendants and ancestors, all of that, right?
Yeah.
But he's redefining it so that your disciples become brothers and sisters. Your followers become your new household. Loyalty is reorganized around this movement. So he's sure. creating a new family.
Yeah.
But at the same time, family was the most important thing. So it's really weird that he's like, hey, family is still awesome, but also fuck your family. Come join this family.
Right. Well, your family's awesome until they, you know, don't believe in me.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And you should be willing to take up a sword against your
metaphorical sword
against yeah. your family.
Because to, they're going to take up a metaphorical sword against you.
Right. Right.
Yeah. But then there also is, like, that was a quote. Remember I said, quote, a yeah. man against his father, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
That actually comes from Micah chapter 7 about Israel's moral corruption. So I'm going to read verses 1 through 7 from Micah chapter 7.
Okay.
What misery is mine? I am like one who gathers summer fruit at the gleaning of the vineyard. There is no cluster of grapes to eat, none of the early figs that I crave. The faithful have been swept from the land. Not one upright person remains. Everyone lies in wait to shed blood. They hunt each other without nets. Or I'm sorry, with nets. Both hands are skilled in doing evil. The ruler demands gifts. The judge accepts bribes. The powerful dictate what they desire. They all conspire together. The best of them is like a briar. The most upright, worse than a thorn hedge. The day God visits you has come. The day your watchmen sound the alarm. Now is the time of your confusion. Do not trust a neighbor. Put no confidence in a friend. Even with the woman who lies in your embrace, guard the words of your lips. For a son dishonors his father, a daughter rises up against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies are the members of his own household. But as for me, I watch in hope for the Lord. I wait for God, my Savior. My God will hear me.
Okay.
So they're just quoting from the Old Testament there, but that was about Israel's moral corruption, and they're trying to apply it to this is going to suck so hard because your family's going to turn against you if you follow me.
Sure.
And I just don't like the random, like, we're just going to pluck shit from the Old Testament again.
I mean, they're going to do that all through this book.
I know, so. And it's always going to be annoying. All right, so moving on, we're still in chapter 10, but we're almost done, okay?
Okay.
Verses 38 and 39. Whoever does not take up their cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Mm. Whoever finds their life will lose it, and whoever loses their life for my sake will find it. And we were like, oh, wait, I'm sorry, cross, what?
Right, yeah.
Why are you referencing your shit?
Right.
So here's the thing. That's our bad. Ugh and oops.
Oh, okay.
This is one of those places where modern readers accidentally hear later Christian symbolism, because to us, cross immediately means Jesus died on it.
Right.
Right? But to Matthew's audience, it meant something more immediate to them. Roman execution, which was happening at the time.
Okay.
Crucifixion was already a very known and terrifying punishment. Condemned prisoners often carried the crossbeam to the execution site. The phrase works only because crucifixion was a recognizable horror, which inadvertently provides us a small window into everyday Roman realities.
Got it.
So he's saying, you know how all the people around us that get condemned and they have to like pick up their cross? I'm telling you that you're going to have to pick up your cross.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Get ready for that.
Okay.
Like it's only like, quote unquote, ironic that it also pertains to him.
Sure.
But we brought that. We're not, look at how ingrained it is. We are not Christians. We were not raised in Christian homes. And yet we hear the word cross, and that's what we brought to this.
Well, sure, sure. And let's keep in mind also that this was actually written after his death. So it was written with the knowledge that he died on the cross.
That's true.
So
I will give you that. I will give you that. So originally the phrase was probably supposed to be something like, be ready for suffering, humiliation, and even death. Be prepared to walk to your own execution if necessary.
Okay.
So that's supposed to be what it meant. But sure. You are right, though. It was written after the fact, and I forgot about that. But still, that's what we brought, though. We sure. brought that.
No, absolutely.
All right. So what was the fucking draw here? Why join the Jesus Tucci gang? We right. were like, what the fuck? Why, what?
Yeah.
Okay. There are some answers to that question. The end of the world did seem very near.
Okay.
Many scholars believe Jesus preached that God's kingdom was like about to arrive any second. If you genuinely believed that history was reaching its climax, dropping everything would make sense.
Sure.
And we've seen that in actual people that we know.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely gaining traction in the world.
Right it now. Is definitely gaining traction and at a scary pace because, again, it's in actual people that we personally know.
Sure.
Don't like it.
No.
Also, let's give Jesus some kudos. He was very charismatic. I mean, he was the, you know, Robert Downey Jesus.
Yeah.
We were talking about him.
Not walking ugly at all, like he's supposed to be.
No, he was walking through town and people was just flocking to him.
Right.
Even skeptical historians generally agree that Jesus attracted followers remarkably quickly. So something about his personality, teaching style, or presence was obviously somewhat compelling.
Sure.
If the stories are to be believed.
Right, right.
Also, the movement itself offered meaning. Many followers were just ordinary folks, downtrodden, and Jesus promised God's kingdom, justice, healing, forgiveness, and a dramatic reversal of social status, like that woman who was bleeding, right?
Yeah.
He dramatically changed that woman's life, if the story is to be believed.
Well, I think that narrative has been proven over and over again throughout history, and even recently in the United States,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, the whole narrative that they used to win Trump's vote, like Trump's yeah. election, mm-hmm. was to speak to a lower class of people.
Yes, right? Like, and it make them come out and vote for the first time ever.
Right, right. Because yeah. he was pitching a message that rang true to them.
Yes.
And look, we can argue about whether that, you know, what that means, what that is, how, what that did to us all day.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is that's why he won.
Right.
He won because he was speaking to a class of people who have been shit on.
Well, both shit on and believe themselves to be shit on in other ways that they haven't
sure,
been.
Sure. No, absolutely. I just want to put it out there. Yeah. No, absolutely.
It depends on if we're talking about racist white fucks or if we're talking about poor whites.
Sure.
Those are two classes that often overlap.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately.
And that is what he was speaking to.
Sure.
Like both of those.
Yeah.
Right. But he won that vote because he was speaking to a crowd that didn't normally get spoken to.
Right. Exactly.
And that's essentially what Jesus is doing.
And that's
here.
What Jesus is doing. Yes. Right. Which gets right into another reason that people would have joined up was for community. The disciples gained a very close-knit group with a shared mission. And people are social creatures. We love movements that allow us to feel like we're part of something bigger.
Yeah.
And that we belong to this ideology that matters.
Right.
So that was another reason.
Yeah.
Which that makes sense. I can understand that.
Yeah. I wish we could get that same enthusiasm for science and
saving the planet.
Yeah.
That'd be nice. That would California be great. Wildfires, right. Or, you know, anything good.
Sure.
Could we do anything good?
Yeah.
Could we just help? Feed the hungry?
No, I take care
of the kids?
I think that they're...
Release the Epstein files?
I think that there is some major rethinking we need to do with regard to how we socially interact in this world.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Definitely.
Because right now, one of the biggest places to get a social network is still a church.
Yeah, it's true.
And unfortunately... That is one of the things that keeps people in churches.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, definitely. Another reason is that some of these people may have genuinely believed that they saw miracles. Whether they saw them or not is irrelevant for this argument. The fact of the matter is some of them probably believed that they saw miracles.
It's the red car thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Whether one interprets those events supernaturally or not, the followers themselves seem to have truly believed that extraordinary things were happening.
Oh, sure.
And everybody had, like, the friend of a friend told me, friend of a friend saw. I mean, the converse of that would be, like, everybody knows somebody who has a kid in school where there's a litter box for kids to pee in. Like, and then you trace it down and, like, yeah, no, nobody knows there because there isn't one.
I would really love to speak to the investigative reporter that followed behind Jesus's healing and miracles and interview the people after the fact.
Totally.
Like, that's the story I want.
Yeah. All right. So we are about to bring this home. I'm pretty much done. I'm just summing it up now. Okay.
Yeah.
Chapter 10 of Matthew is one of the places where Jesus sounds the least like a founder trying to sell a movement. Because a typical recruiter will say something like, join us and prosper bigly. You'll gain influence and followers. The price of eggs will come down. If you're a celebrity, they let you do it. You'll win so much you get tired of winning. It'll be awesome. Everything's great. It'll be gold and money and coins and all of that. Hold on.
All right.
Instead, chapter 10 says, not so much. You're going to get rejected. People will hate you. You're going to get canceled. Mommy and daddy are getting a divorce and neither of them want you for Christmas. This is really going to suck and you'll almost definitely die.
I disagree. I think that messaging that's being used by Jesus right here is the same exact messaging that's being used in churches today. That messaging where you're setting your flock, your people up to be contrarian to the rest of the world. You are your own, like, you are special because you're here, because you're with us.
The church, yeah.
The rest of these people out here suck, and they're all going to give you a hard time because you're with us. But we have it right, and you're right.
Yes. The church is yes. I was mostly making fun of Trump because he's not doing it the church way.
Right.
He's not...
There is still some of that there, too. Not necessarily with him, but with that movement. There are people out there as spokesmen for the MAGA movement that are saying things like that to keep them, that specifically news outlets that are using this contrarian point of view where everybody sucks except for us.
You know? It's not really an us versus them so much as it's a, I hate them. Come hate them with me. And it's always them. There is no us.
Right.
We're not even talking about us. Look at them. Let's make fun of them. Let's talk about them. Look at them with the them's taking our guns and them's. They're brown and scary. Them. Right.
But no matter which way you pitch it, you're still setting it up for, no matter if it's positive or negative, it's still us versus them.
No, that's true. That is true.
So.
Yeah, I wrote, somehow the movement grew. Fuck me. And I thought that was a perfect place to end this chapter.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Because fuck this New Testament. I hate it.
I mean, yeah, it's still written better
than a lot of the readable. Old Testament. It is readable, but that's not necessarily to its...
Wife really just doesn't like it because she's got to do a lot more work.
I don't mind doing the work. I mind what the work is doing.
Sure.
You know, it's making me hate it more than I would have to if I was just like reading it without studying it. Sure. But because I'm having to study it, I'm having to argue with my notes, you know, and be like, nah, fuck that.
Right. Right.
And again, I'm having to look up, oh, you quoted from this. What is this shit that you're quoting? And I have to go look that up. And like, we spent 5 years reading the Old Testament. I don't remember any of that.
Right.
What did that mean?
We're 10 chapters in and there's so much just wrong.
Yes.
That like it puts the Old Testament to shame.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, it's just packed with wrong.
I hate it. This, yes, I hate it. I fucking hate it. And you know what?
It's got the wrong built in already, mm-hmm. but it's also got the wrong where it's trying to reference the wrong that was in the fucking Old Testament. Like, it's just, it's like it's wrong on top of wrong on top of wrong.
Here's the thing. With the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, when it was wrong, I was like, oh, that's so cute. That's wrong.
Sure, yeah.
You know what I mean? Right, like, yeah. that's funny. They got that wrong.
Right.
Like, with this shit, this is still what people quote. And I'm like, that's not fucking funny. It's not cute. I can't just like, aw, look at those old people from back then.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, no, it's the people in our Senate.
This is what you guys are telling us is like the real shit.
Yeah.
So
I hate it so much.
Yeah.
But it is a better read than the Old Testament.
Right.
The end.
All right. Well, that was Matthew chapters 9 and 10 Q&A.
Sure as fuck was.
And I don't know... What are we doing next time?
Next time we will be back with chapter 11.
Okay.
And we will be doing chapters 11, 12, and 13 as a group again before we do a Q&A.
Okay. And then we'll decide based on how much research you need to do.
How many Q&As we'll do.
We'll need to do.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. One or two.
Sure.
Maybe three if all three chapters are major, but God help me.
All right, guys, that's all we got for today, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Hey, wife, I guess that's the end?
But husband, that's just sad.
It doesn't have to be. We are on lots of social media platforms like Twitter. Our handle there is sacrilegious_D.
For D's nuts.
Oh, my God. Stop doing that. Anyway, we're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest. There's a link to all of our social media sites at our website.
Ooh, we have a website?
Yeah, it's sacrilegiousdiscourse.com, where you can also find a link to our merch shop.
We have a merch shop?
Yep. We have podcast-themed clothing, mugs, notebooks, and more, as well as an atheist and science-themed products.
Wow, our fans should really go check that out right now.
Definitely. They can get in touch with us by sending an email to sacrilegiousdiscourse@gmail.com. But before they do that, we could really use some help.
Oh yeah? With what?
Well, it's not free running the podcast, and we need some financial support in order to get better equipment, which will free up time so we can concentrate on our podcast and our fans.
Okay, so what should they do?
Head over to patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse and sign up as a contributor on our podcast. Supporters there receive additional bi-weekly episodes that we record just for our Patreon members for as little as $2 a month.
Also, we'd really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe on whatever platform you're using.
And Apple Podcast reviews help us out tremendously.
Like and subscribe. Leave an Apple review. Join us on Twitter. Support us on Patreon. That's a lot of instructions. Don't forget to say thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.